10 o'clock. CBS News, 7 hours until the polls open in Michigan and Maryland, the latest states to hold presidential primaries. I'm Mitchell Krause, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. In Michigan, the contests are between President Ford and Ronald Reagan, between Jimmy Carter and Morris Udall. And in Maryland, the main battle shapes up between Carter and California Governor Brown, who Monday stumped the state heavily. But now Brown is in Providence, Rhode Island, as Jim McManus reports.
Governor Brown completed his Maryland campaign in a final sprint from the Washington suburbs to Baltimore and then flew to Providence to help shore up his already strong support among Rhode Island's full slate of uncommitted delegates. Brown supporters here say 3 of 4 Rhode Island uncommitted delegates have expressed support for the California governor, but they say whether he can move Democratic votes to that uncommitted column depends almost entirely on whether he defeats Jimmy Carter in Maryland. Brown has scheduled a half day in Rhode Island and a long afternoon in New Jersey, where he'll try to capitalize on a strong Stop Carter movement in his plea for support from uncommitted delegates there. Meanwhile, the latest polls indicate that Brown and Carter are neck and neck in Maryland, with an apparent but small movement toward Carter among voters making their choices at the 11th hour. And both candidates have agreed the Maryland race is too close to call. Jim McManus, CBS News, with the Brown campaign in Rhode Island.
The latest on the White House social event of the evening after this.
Parents, love your child by teaching him or her to read and succeed. One way you may help is to read stories to them and give them large picture books at which they might look. Show him or her that you care by sharing the pictures with them. Ask the child questions about the pictures that will help the child organize his or her thoughts and point out things of interest. Listen for other new approach method, Reading Hints to Parents, furnished as a public service announcement by this radio station. For further ways you can help your child, write the New Approach Method Incorporated, Post Office Box 1303, Trenton, New Jersey, 08607. That's the New Approach Method Incorporated, Post Office Box 1303, Trenton, New Jersey, 08607.
President Ford, on the eve of the Michigan primary, spent this night hosting a White House dinner in honor of visiting French President Valéry Giscard d'Estaing. Sandwiched between a variety of entertainment and a dinner consisting of everything from Columbia River salmon to fillet of beef, complete with California wines, the American president said history had thrown the United States and France closer and closer in time of war, but now it was time to meet such problems as inflation, recession, the energy crisis, and peace. The French president hailed what he called a new era of French-American relations and said that whether in prosperity or adversity, France is a dependable friend. On Tuesday, that relationship will be put to the test of the Washington discussion circuit as the guest from Paris begins his bicentennial visit in earnest, still suffering from jet lag, although perhaps less than most travelers after the 3.5-hour Concorde supersonic flight from the continent. Politics and violence in the Middle East, an uneasy calm prevails on the West Bank of the Jordan following an incident in which an Arab youth was killed by Israeli troops during a rock-throwing demonstration in Calandria, the second Arab teenager to be shot in as many days. Across the river in Jordan, Soviet Air Marshal Kutikov arrived to discuss Jordan's possible purchase of Soviet anti-aircraft missiles in place of American missiles. The Jordanians indicated they felt the U.S. missiles were becoming too expensive. A U.S. Defense Department team will go to Amman next week to make a new offer. And in Lebanon, negotiations between Muslim leftists, Palestinian guerrillas, Christian moderates, Syrian political leaders, and a Libyan mediator failed to bring peace. The weekend death toll, including the casualties, now in excess of 1,000. Now this message.
Hello world, Denny Bracken here with the Prince of the Palate Pleasers, Mike Roy. And it appears we're going to take a journey tomorrow on the cook thing here over CBS.
Huh? Oh, we're off to Switzerland to sample the potatoes, St. Moritz.
Yoodle-yoo-hoo-hoo.
And I might even ski.
What?
I heard me.
See, you on a set of skis. He sinks 6 feet into the snow, friends, and doesn't move a peg.
Comfortable, though.
Unless he happens to fall on you. Tomorrow on Mike Roy's cooking thing, fall in here on the CBS radio network.
When people in other countries need refuge, the Migration and Refugee Office of the United States Catholic Conference tries to help.
The Catholic Conference Office of Refugee and Migration helped me to come here from Cambodia, and I am very thankful for them to help me to get a house and a job.
The work with refugees from the Far East continues. Help these people blend into our society. Support the Office of Migration and Refugees through the American Catholic Overseas Aid Appeal.
The latest figure is 17 and subject to change by the hour. That's the number of purported Howard Hughes wills now in the hands of Las Vegas officials. 9 of the wills arriving on Monday. But officials say that they doubt that any of them will reach the probate stage, at least in the near future. The main reason? Conflicting advice from handwriting experts and lawyers representing various Hughes relatives. One will received in the afternoon mail was only 5 lines long. It left all of Hughes' $2 billion to a person in Kennewick, Washington, and listed as witnesses, Hopalong Cassidy, Jack the Ripper, Sam Spade, and Alfred E. Newman. Mitchell Krause, CBS News.
CBS 4 Seattle, this is KIXI. The weather outlook calls for increasing cloudiness tonight with slight chance of a little rain at times. Tomorrow and tomorrow night, partial clearing with chance of a few showers on Wednesday. Highs near 60, lows in the mid-40s. And currently in downtown Seattle, 51 degrees. It's 52 at the airport. The barometer holds steady. It reads 30.18. Taking a look at sports, Major League Baseball activity in the National League, first of all. Atlanta beat Houston 3-2 in the first game. Houston won the second by a score of 3-2. Pittsburgh over St. Louis, 2-1. Those are the only games completed so far in the National League. In the American League, Baltimore beat Milwaukee 4-3. Boston over Detroit, 7-0. And California defeated Chicago, Kansas City over Texas. The CBS Radio Mystery Theater is next on KIXI. The time now is 7 minutes past 10.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... G. Marshall. Today, nostalgia is king, or should we say queen? What is lacking in these times that we constantly seek solace in the past? Especially when the truth is, the past was a harder, slower, hungrier place. Yet, many of us try to recapture the past by seizing upon its outward trappings. You who do so should be careful. Unconsciously, you may break through the glitter and capture the essence. And then what will become of you? Your clothes and hairstyle may come back into fashion, but your sense of values?
Captain, I tell you there was a witness to the killing.
Who?
Someone was here, and that someone was shot.
If that someone was shot, where's the body?
I don't know.
Now, this person was shot at least 3 times with a .357 Magnum revolver. This person should, therefore, be dead.
I know, but I
ask again, and keep asking, show me the body. Show me even a little blood stain. But please, show me something.
Our mystery drama, Blind Witness, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Patricia Elliott and Carmen Matthews. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
To the man who bought the Skyhawk, to the girl in the century, we're glad you like your Buicks, glad you set your spirit free.
And to the family from Ohio, to the folks up in St. Paul, nice to see you join us, nice to see you all.
There I was with my new Buick Skylark, and there he was, just coming out of the store with a new coffee table. I like your coffee table, I said. I was going to buy one just like it. Thank you, he said. I like your Buick Skylark, too. I was going to buy one just like it. Thank you, I answered. Then he suggested, listen, you like my coffee table and I like your Skylark. Why don't we get married? What can I say? I guess it was love at first, Buick.
It's nice to see you join us.
us. We're glad it came to be. Nice to see you join us. Let your spirits free.
Buick, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Electrical appliances are extremely useful time-saving aids. But without proper precautions, they can be instruments of destruction. In fact, government statistics show that 80% of all electrical appliance accidents are due to carelessness. Underwriters Laboratories consumer safety expert Janice Farr says there's an easy way you can help avoid contributing to that 80%.
That's right. I strongly recommend that you read and heed your appliance instruction booklets. Most booklets contain valuable safety tips, such as recommending that you unplug your portable appliance from the outlet when not in use, and that you not let the cord hang over the edge of a table or counter, or touch hot surfaces.
And to be extra safe,
it's a good idea to keep your instruction booklets in a convenient place for quick and easy reference. Remember, the instruction booklet is there, so why not use it?
This has been a public service announcement from Underwriters Laboratories and this station.
Truth, as we all would agree, is stranger than fiction. And that is because, as the scientists tell us, matter can neither be created nor destroyed. The things we have to work with are the things that already exist, and only they can serve as the building blocks for our castles, real or imagined. We call the ones that we have seen before truth, and the new or strange ones fiction. The difference lies in perception. Is everything clear? Well then, forward with our story.
All right, you know the place. It's around the corner.
Okay.
First, walk past. See if he's alone.
Hey, you expect I'd go in there if there was somebody in a joint? What do you think? I started in this racket yesterday.
He ought to be by himself this hour of the night. If not...
Yeah, I'll wait.
You walk in, you don't say a word. You just let him have it, you understand?
Why are you so nervous, Chap?
I was born nervous.
It's as dark as the ace of spades. The rain's coming down, cats and dogs. There ain't a soul on the street.
This job has to be right, exactly right.
So that's why I'm here, ain't it?
All right. Go get him.
You got my dough? I don't do this for kicks.
You know I got your dough.
25 seconds to walk to the joint. 10 seconds to knock him off. 25 seconds to walk back to the car. That's what they call portal-to-portal pay. It adds up to exactly 1 minute. 10 grand for 1 minute's
work. If you said, go ahead.
10 grand a minute. I'm the highest paid wage earner in the world.
Well, you go already. What are you waiting for?
All right. In 3 minutes, it's going to be midnight.
So what?
It's still Friday the 13th.
You mean you're scared of that stuff?
In this line of work, you take every edge you can get. Why knock a guy off on Friday the 13th when you can wait 2 minutes and cool him on Saturday the 14th?
Good evening, Mr. Ascalon.
Now, what are you doing out of this time of night, Mr. Hume? You should be scared to walk the streets.
Thank you for your concern, Mr. Ascalon. You're a true friend.
Well, it's almost midnight, and there's a very low element out on the streets.
I have come to obtain my sister's medicine.
Yes. I've got some right here.
Oh, thank you. How much is it?
The usual price, $5.
Mr. Ascalon, haven't you ever heard of inflation?
In inflation?
You have been charging me $5 for the past 25 years. Shouldn't the price have gone up?
Oh, not to you, Mr. Hume. Now, I tell you what you better do. I'm about to close up, so if you wait a few minutes, I'll walk you to your door.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Oh, those hard candies my sister is so fond of, did they come in?
Oh, yes. Now, where did I put them? Oh, yes. You go down to the first row of shelves near the door, and it's the... Oh, Listen to me. I keep forgetting you can't see.
The first row of shelves, you said?
How do you do it, Mr. Hume?
It's a matter of mastering your environment, of visualizing every shape, of memorizing every distance. Down here, you said?
Yes, yes. Say, that's uncanny. I mean, how do you just put your finger on it? Oh, yes, sir. What can I do for you? No. No, don't. Don't.
Mr. Ascalon? Mr. Ascalon?
Hey, who are you? Where did you come from?
Mr.
It's too Ascalon. Bad, sister.
What?
Get out of here.
It sounded like the 4th of July in there. What happened?
There was a dame in the store.
What do you mean there was a dame in the store?
I look in the window. He's all by himself. I walk in, I hit him, and all of a sudden I hear this dame's voice.
What dame's voice?
She must have been behind a shelf. She just shapes up out of nowhere.
Well, did you...
Yeah. She's finished.
Listen, are you sure?
Nobody could live with all the lead I give her.
And Ascalon?
You don't have to worry about Ascalon no more.
Yeah, with that dame and all, it better be clean.
Cleanliness guaranteed. That's why I get the price. Hand it over.
Okay.
10 big ones. But it took me a little more than a minute. And my overhead also went up. Must be this inflation, huh?
Captain Sterling.
Oh, yes, sir.
The man's name was Armand Ascalon. 50 years old. As he owned a drugstore. I assigned it to Jedwick. Julia Jedwick. Well, she's attached to homicide. Yes, so she's a detective first grade. No, I don't think she can do any harm. I'll supervise her closely. Yes, sir.
Oh, none of this. I need it.
Captain Sterling?
Come in, Julia. Come in. Sit down. Now, what we got here is one of these neighborhood knockoffs. Now, you know how to go about this?
Well, sir, I'm...
Now, the best way is to keep your eyes and your ears open and work close with the patrolman on the beat.
Yes, Captain.
Now, what we got here has to be a stick-up. You know, most likely a junkie or else some hood. And, well, Julia, don't be afraid to lean on me for help.
Thank you, Captain Sterling.
Any questions?
It's just about the gun.
What about the gun?
I have a report from ballistics.
Mm-hmm.
The two bullets that were found in his body were fired by a .357 Magnum revolver.
So, what's your question?
Well, it would seem to me, sir, that your ordinary junkie or hoodlum who holds up a store wouldn't have an expensive Magnum. Mm-hmm. That type would usually employ a cheap Saturday night special.
Well, a junkie could steal a Magnum, couldn't he?
Well, yes, Captain, but if it was a junkie and he needed money for a fix, he would have sold the Magnum.
That's not bad thinking, Julia. So it doesn't have to be a junkie. It could be just some punk out to raise cash.
Yes, sir. It's just that no money was taken. Mr. Ascalon had a $5 bill in his hand, and there was $100 in the cash drawer, and I don't know how to account for that.
Well, here's how. You'll learn with experience. Now, there's a certain type of punk who nerves himself up to pull a job. You know, it goes wrong. He shoots, he kills, he sees the dead victim, and he gets terrified, and all he wants to do is get out fast. Now, you understand?
Yes, sir, I do. It's just that a Magnum, well, isn't quite the kind of revolver for the type of killer you have in mind. A Magnum makes you think of a professional killer, and...
Huh?
Well, why would a professional risk everything on a $100 holdup?
I like what you're trying to do, Julia. You have the stuff to become a good detective. But this is open and shut. You're looking for a punk who panicked. So you go out there and do the routine things and look for people who might have seen or heard something.
Yes, sir. Well, I already have.
Good. Any results?
Well, it introduced a problem. First of all, the number of shots that were fired.
Why is that a problem?
Well, I found exactly 8 people who told me that they heard the shooting, and some say they heard 5 shots, some say they heard 6,
mm-hmm.
but all agreed that they heard more than 2.
Well?
But only 2 bullets hit Mr. Ascalon.
Oh, doesn't that only go to prove what I told you? Who's a nervous punk who empties the gun at Ascalon and only hits him twice?
Yes, Captain, but that still leaves us with a problem. 5 or 6 shots were fired. 2 hit Mr. Ascalon. Mm-hmm. That leaves 3 or 4 slugs unaccounted for.
What do you mean, unaccounted for?
We can't find them. They should be in the wall behind, above, or either side of where Mr. Ascalon was standing, but there's no trace of them.
But they gotta be there.
We went over the place very carefully, and, well, that raises another problem.
Yeah?
The glass door to the street, it was smashed, probably by a bullet, or bullets.
Well, what should that have
to do? Well, as you enter the store, the counter is directly to the rear. We found Mr. Ascalon's body behind that counter.
Well, what's the problem? The cash register's on that counter, the hood comes in, guns him down.
Yes, with 2 shots, but where did the others go?
You tell me.
There were 2 groups of shots.
What do you mean, 2 groups?
All the accounts of the people who heard the shooting agree. First they heard 2 shots. Then there was a pause, a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Then 3 or 4 more shots. Therefore, the first 2 shots were fired at Mr. Ascalon. The next 3 or 4 were fired at someone else.
How do you know?
The killer enters the store. He shoots Mr. Ascalon. Now, to do that, the killer has to be facing the rear wall. Now, he hears or he sees something that makes him turn around to face the front of the store. He fires again.
At whom?
Well, at someone who must have witnessed the crime. That's why we can't find the slugs. They were fired in the direction of the street. 1 or more even broke the glass in the front door.
Well, what happened to the witness, if there was a witness?
The witness could have stopped 1, 2, 3, or up to 4 of those bullets.
But he didn't stop any of them as far as we know. If he's dead, we would have found the body. See, maybe the killer could have missed him clean.
But the fact is, Captain Sterling, there is a witness. The killer did fire at somebody.
Well, maybe. Maybe not. It's a dark night. It's raining hard. The killer is nervous. He thinks he hears a sound of something just outside. He turns around. He fires wild, blind. Well, that could account for all the shots.
Yes, Captain.
Well, you were going real good there for a while, Julia. And I like the way you think. But, like I said, in the end, it'll turn out to be a junkie or a hood. You don't think so, huh?
Well, you could be right.
Okay, okay. Knock it off, will you? I'm coming. Okay. Who's there?
Me, Chappie. Mule. Mule. Oh,
hey, what's the matter with you?
Let me in quick.
Yeah, I was fast asleep. Good thing you woke me up. I got a plane leaves in an hour.
Have you seen the morning paper?
Oh, I never read the paper.
Yeah, well, you better read this. It says druggist murdered.
Well, you gotta expect the papers to print this type of thing. It's news, ain't it?
Just read it.
Well, why should I read it? Ain't gonna be news to me.
Druggist murdered. At midnight last night, Mr. Armand Ascalon, 50-year-old proprietor of Ascalon's Pharmacy on the corner of Bridge and High Streets, was shot to death by a bandit.
Hey, I ain't no bandit.
It has not yet been determined what has been taken from the store. The police are following an active line of investigation, according to Captain of Homicide Detectives James L. Sterling, Jr.
So?
Why do you mean so? Ain't there something missing from that story?
I don't think so.
Think, for crying out loud.
Oh, okay. What's the beef?
My boss calls me into the office this morning, right after he reads the paper. And he lays this question on me, and so I'm laying it on you. What about the dame?
What dame?
You said there was a dame in the store.
Well, that's right, there was. I didn't spot her at first, but since she seen the whole thing, I had to take care of her, too.
And you did?
I told you she's dead.
Well, that's what I told the boss last night. So this morning he wants to know, why don't it say nothing about her in the paper?
What do you mean? It's got to say, hand me that.
Yeah, go ahead, pal. Where does it say 1 word about the dame?
But I got her. I know I got her.
Then why wasn't it reported? They can't keep a thing like this out of the press. You missed her. That's what you did. You missed the clean.
No, I wasn't 10 feet away from her, and I don't miss. I could even hear it go, ugh, when them first bullets hit her. She's dead, I tell you, Chappie, she's dead.
Okay, Mule. Just answer me one question. Where's the body?
Where, indeed? Is it possible that Mr. Mule, who is obviously a highly skilled professional assassin, could have fired all those shots at her and missed? Mr. Mule is convinced it could be a trick on the part of the police. But we know the police are completely unaware of Mr. Hoon themselves. Well, what did happen? Is she dead or alive? I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
And now Coffee Rich, the frozen non-dairy creamer, presents Coffee Klatch.
Tonight we hear Harry and Edith, Richfield City's controversial couple, in deep conversation.
Harry?
Huh?
Harry?
What do you want, Edith?
Harry, your mother's coming.
Right.
Well, what color pitcher do you want me to serve the coffee, Richie?
I don't know anything about pitchers. I mean, just pour it from the carton. It'll be fine.
Mommy!
Harry, my baby!
Mommy, my mommy!
Take my coat and get me a cup of coffee.
Oh, sure. Here, Mom.
Hmm. I see you've taught the little lady a little something about good taste.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This coffee's creamy and delicious. Edith must be trying to impress me by using Coffee Rich.
Hi, Mother. You noticed the coffee, Rich. It's really convenient. You just keep it in the refrigerator. When I heard
it,
you...
Edith. You made two good choices in your life. You married my Harry, and now you're serving Coffee Rich. Why don't you quit while you're ahead?
And so we shall. Take it from Harry's mommy and try delicious Coffee Rich yourself. Coffee Rich, in your grocer's frozen food case.
I look at it this way. I played a wide variety of parts. I played a man named Charlie who was mentally retarded. I've played a presidential candidate, a rodeo rider, and a PT boat skipper. And for each role, I try to learn everything I can about that character. I'm Cliff Robertson, and I'm trying to explain my reasons for wanting to see cancer conquered. In the parts I play, I learn how people are the same and how they're different. One common thing everyone faces is the threat of cancer. How we react is what makes us different. For me personally, I react positively. I know what I must do, and I do it. I'd urge you to do the same. Regular health checkups are protection. Knowing cancer's warning signals is a defense. And supporting the American Cancer Society is a way of getting rid of the threat of this disease. Please give generously to your American Cancer Society. As they say, we want to wipe out cancer in your lifetime.
Edgar Allan Poe, who invented the type of story you're listening to now, set down the basic rules. These were later refined and polished by one of Poe's greatest disciples, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And the most important rule states, when you have eliminated the impossible, whatever explanation remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth. Which brings us now to a consideration of the elderly blind lady we had met earlier, Miss Agatha Terhoon.
Aggie? Aggie, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. What a dream I had.
Dream? About what?
Please, dear sister, don't press me for details.
But you have such a frightened look on your face.
Maggie, you're up, and you're in your wheelchair. You were able to get out of bed and into your chair by yourself.
Yes, Aggie, dear, thanks to you, because you left the medicine right by my bed, and it eased the pain sufficiently.
The medicine? Oh, no. Oh, then it wasn't a dream, Maggie. It wasn't a dream.
Oh, please, I don't understand.
And Mr. Ascalon is dead.
Aggie, what are you talking about?
You had finally fallen asleep. It was close to midnight. Your medicine bottle was empty. I knew you would need some in the morning, and so I went downstairs.
You went down into the jungle at night?
Maggie, dear, could you face the morning without your medicine?
But you could have been murdered. These streets at night... You know what lurks behind every doorway.
And so I fortified myself. I put on the vest. At least, I would be safe from knives and bullets.
You should have waited till morning and wheeled me. The rule is, you must never go alone.
By morning, you would have been in too much pain.
I would have put up with it somehow, and beneath my blanket, I could have the Colt 45 in one hand and the can of mace in the other.
I had no choice.
Aggie, you know you can't see.
I know how to get every single place in this neighborhood and back. Just because I'm blind is no reason to treat me as an invalid. Oh, my poor darling Maggie. I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have said that word.
It's true. I am an invalid. I can't walk. I'm also a drug addict.
Don't say that.
Will that change anything? We were both in the same accident.
Don't relive it.
I lost the use of my legs. You lost the use of your eyes. For 40 years now, I've clung to you. I've been supported by your strength because I have none of my own. Look at us. We've become two crazy old ladies because of me.
I won't listen to any more of this.
You risked your life for me. You said Mr. Ascalon is dead?
Yes. He was killed by a jungle animal.
How awful. How do you know?
I was in the store when it happened.
Oh, Aggie, did the killer see you?
Not at first. He walked into the store and began shooting. Then he noticed me.
Oh, Aggie!
He said, "Hey, who are you? Where did you come from?"
And did you say anything?
I was petrified. And then he said, "It's too bad, sister." And I heard him shoot. And the noise of the shots were deafening. And I felt the bullet crash into my vest with such force that I was almost knocked off my feet. And I could feel little stinging sensations as each bullet struck.
The vest. Let me look at the vest.
It's on the chair beside my bed.
Oh, the cover is torn. What are these pieces of metal?
The slugs. They must have been caught in the padding.
Oh,
poor Mr. Ascalon. Why would anyone wish to shoot him? He was good to poor people like us. Do you know, if it weren't for Mr. Ascalon, I would have to go elsewhere for that medicine. Do you realize how much we would have to pay?
The killer, he saw you. He spoke to you.
Yes.
Which means he knows what you look like.
Yes. Yes, he probably does.
He shot at you so you couldn't describe him.
Well, I couldn't describe him anyway.
But he doesn't know that, so he will come looking for you.
Oh, no, no, he won't.
Why do you say that?
Because he thinks he killed me.
But your body won't be found in the store along with Mr. Ascalon.
Oh, I didn't think of that. I know he had a good look at me. Oh, I'm scared.
No, please. Please, don't be frightened. No, it's my turn to be strong. Now, neither of us will leave the house. You must not be seen on the streets. We can telephone Mr. Bernstein to send us our groceries.
But I will have to leave the house.
No, I won't allow it.
I'll have to find another person to sell me your medicine.
I'll do without.
You can't.
So the pains aren't real. If they were, then Dr. Morrison would have prescribed the medicine for me.
Whether or not the pains are real, they're real enough to you.
I'll have to stop humoring myself. And you'll have to stop humoring me. Your life depends on it.
Yeah, I know that's for me. Yeah. This chappie. He says he knocked her off. That's what I told him. Okay, boss, let me lay it on him. Right.
What's going on, Chappie?
It's as simple as 1, 2, 3. You didn't hit the old lady.
But
nothing. So, we gotta find her. And you gotta get rid of her. Suppose she describes you to the cops.
I got an alibi. You think I ever leave home without one?
Yeah, well, some cops may recognize you from the description.
Yeah, well, I told you.
No, Mule, it's our headache, because if you come into the picture, alibi or not, the cops will know it wasn't a stick-up, which is what my boss wants them to think it was.
Okay, what do you want me to do?
Describe her.
Well, how do you describe an old dame? Skinny, dressed in black, maybe 70 years old. You know what I mean?
White hair?
Yeah, I think so. And, anyway, something else. Glasses.
Okay, is that it?
Yeah, that's it. Except...
Except what?
Nothing, I guess. If I seen her again, I'd know her.
Okay, Mule, okay. We're going to make sure you see her again.
Good evening, Mrs. Caravelle.
Oh, yeah, you're the cop, the lady cop.
Yes, may I come in? Thank you.
Yeah, got more questions you want to ask me, huh?
Just one, Mrs. Caravelle.
You know, they ought to have more lady cops. Kind of makes everything easier.
Now, the other night, when Mr. Ascalon was killed...
Yeah?
You heard a series of shots?
Yeah.
Did you hear any other sounds in the street? I noticed that your window opened...
No, I didn't see anything. We was in bed.
How about an automobile?
After the shots, I'm sure I heard something sound like a guy was running, and then I heard a car taking off fast.
And that's all?
Yeah. My husband, he slept through it all. You could drop the atom bomb in here, and he never... But I run to the window and looked. The street was deserted.
And you're sure you heard nothing more?
Well, later on, I heard one of my tenants, this Miss Aggie Terhune, coming up the stairs.
How did you know that it was her coming up the stairs?
Oh, I could hear that cane of hers go thump, thump.
Oh, I see. Then she came upstairs right after the murder?
Yeah, around that time.
And she'd been outside in that weather at that hour. Where do you suppose she'd been?
Well, I figured the drugstore. See, she's got this twin sister in a wheelchair that always needs her medicine.
Then she had to be there at the time of the murder. Are you sure that you heard her coming up the stairs?
Well, she couldn't have been there while Mr. Ascalon was being murdered, or she'd have been killed, too. I don't know, maybe I didn't hear her coming up the stairs.
But you just said you were positive.
Such a scary night. Maybe I dreamed it.
Maggie? It's the door.
Yes.
Who could it be?
I don't know. The killer.
Miss Calhoun?
It's a woman's voice.
Oh, the killer wasn't a woman.
He could have brought one along to throw us off guard.
Miss Terhune.
Even so, Aggie, we have to answer.
Do you have the Colt 45 handy?
Yes.
Who is it?
It's a police officer.
What do you want?
I have to ask you some questions.
Can we trust her?
Miss Terhune, I can't identify myself properly.
I'm about... to open the door, have your badge ready.
She's all right, Aggie. That's a police badge. And she's alone.
Please, don't point that automatic at me.
I have a license to own it, and I know how to use it.
A pistol?
We find it necessary in this jungle.
And hanging on the wall, is that a bulletproof vest? It is. This quality must have cost a fortune. We don't even have anything this good in the police department.
How can we help you, officer?
Which of you is Miss Agnes Terhune?
I am.
Did you know Mr. Armand Ascalon?
Yes, we bought our medicines there.
When was the last time you saw him?
I never saw him.
I beg your pardon?
My sister is blind.
I'm sorry. I'm looking for someone who might have been in the store before or during the time of the murder.
Neither my sister nor I would venture into the streets at that hour.
I see. I'm sure. Well, ladies, I'm so sorry I bothered you. Thank you very much for your cooperation. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Yes,
goodbye.
Aggie, you could have told her the truth. That you were in the drugstore.
No, my dear. We must keep out of this at all costs.
But she was a police officer. Couldn't we trust her?
We can't trust anyone who lives out there in that jungle.
The jungle. Who says the jungle must be a damp, steamy mass of crazy vegetation? It can be a steel and stone canyon of tall buildings and busy traffic. After all, it's not what the place looks like that makes it a jungle. It's the law that its inhabitants obey or choose to disregard. Our safari continues in Act 3, which I shall bring to you in just a few moments.
From Maine to Mauna Loa, all across this great big land, there's a neighbor who is ready to lend a helping hand. When a hurricane is brewing, when an old man needs a friend, where there's suffering, where there's trouble, there's a friend you can depend on. Maine to Mauna Loa, all across this great big land, there's a neighbor who is ready to lend a helping hand. When a hurricane is brewing, when an old man needs a friend, where there's suffering, where there's trouble, there's a friend you can depend on. Red Cross is the
that you've been discriminated against on the job because you're between age 40 and 65, call the folks at the nearest federal wage and hour office today. They're listed under U.S. Government, Department of Labor. This is Diana Trask, and this message has been brought to you as a public service by the U.S. Department of Labor and this station.
Start simply enough. What appears to be a routine holdup suddenly assumes larger and weightier proportions. Both the law and the criminals are searching for a supposed witness. A diligent young policewoman has succeeded in her quest. How does the underworld plan to go about it?
Listen, Chappie, I can't afford to hang around here. I got a business to attend to.
Oh, no, you're going to hang around here until your business here is finished.
I've been prowling the neighborhood. I could spot the old dame.
Pulling your horns.
What does that mean?
The boss just figured out how we can get this old dame to come to us.
Yeah?
What was she doing in a drugstore at midnight in a howling rain?
Beats me.
Come on, use your head. Would she go out if it wasn't something important? Why did the boss want Ascalon knocked off in the first place?
I never ask them kind of questions.
To let all the smallies know that he's running the drug racket in this town. Nobody can go into business for himself. It's got to be organized.
All right.
This Ascalon clown was running what amounted to a charity clinic. The fact that he got knocked off made the message loud and clear.
So, what does this have to do with my old dame?
An old dame. She has to be a junkie. She needed a fix.
Yeah?
What else? You shot at her and missed.
How could I miss?
You scared her. Now, you know what she looks like. She knows she's in trouble. So what's she doing? She's laying low. But sooner or later, she's got to come to the surface.
Why?
Because she's a junkie. She'll need the stuff again. She can't go to Ascalon no more. She'll have to find a supplier. And the only supplier operating in that neighborhood right now is one of our own people.
Captain, I found the witness.
What witness?
Well, you remember I told you the killer fired at someone else after he shot Mr. Ascalon?
Now, Julia, that's pure speculation.
The person he fired at was the witness, and I found her.
Her?
But we have a problem. She refuses to admit she was there, and even if she did, She couldn't help us to identify the killer. She's blind.
What?
A little old blind lady.
What are you handing me?
The killer spotted her and fired at her and would have killed her, but... Oh, you'll never believe this. She was wearing a bulletproof vest.
You are saying to me that standing in the store when the killing happened was a blind old lady wearing a bulletproof vest?
That's it, Captain. That's what I'm saying, and I can prove it. I saw the vest, and one of the slugs was still stuck inside it. I managed to sneak it out and have it tested at ballistics. It was fired from the same gun that killed Mr. Ascalon.
You mean you got all this already?
Well, you see, I had to ask myself why this blind old lady would go down to Ascalon's store so late at night in a bad neighborhood.
She wore a bulletproof vest?
Yes. You see, she and her sister are somewhat, well, eccentric. But it must have been for something very important, I said to myself. Well, I searched through Mr. Ascalon's files, and I couldn't find a prescription for Miss Terhune. So, what was he giving her?
Drugs.
That's right. And when you look closely at the sister, you see the classic signs of addiction. Her nose itches, she had a nervous tic, her eyes can't seem to focus, she sniffs.
Drugs, sure. That's why Ascalon was knocked off. He was freelancing. The syndicate must have wanted to teach an object lesson.
Yes, sir.
There you see? How you put these things together after you've had as much experience as I have? No, Julia. It's all yours. You deserve all the credit.
Sir, for what? We don't have the killer.
We will.
But how?
They are going to come after your little old lady.
Well, but how can they find her?
You found her. Never let yourself get trapped into thinking that you're the only smart one.
But if... Well... But they don't have to find her. She can't identify the killer. She's blind.
They don't know that.
But they're going to try to kill this woman.
I know.
Isn't there something we can do?
Yes. We can protect her.
But, sir, we're not infallible.
Well, what do you want us to do? Spread a story in the press that, yes, there is a witness, but she's blind?
Well, that might stop them from...
No, that wouldn't help. They wouldn't believe it. They'd smell a rat.
But,
Julia, they know there's a witness. They won't rest till they get her, unless we get them first.
Maggie, I need my medicine.
I know, Maggie, dear. I know it's hard.
I have to have my medicine. I have to.
But I can't go to Ascalon's anymore.
Go somewhere else.
I can't be seen on the street.
Maggie, please. Oh, please. Everything hurts.
Try to stand it just for a little longer.
Oh, help me.
Maggie, hold on.
Try. It's your fault. The accident was your fault. You were driving the car. You were jealous of me. Jealous of my beautiful legs.
Try to calm yourself.
I was the pretty one. You smashed up the car so you could smash me. Oh. You did. And you were punished for it. You were blinded. I want my medicine. I want my medicine.
Wait a little bit, please. Make it last as long as you can. Wait till tonight.
No,
please.
No.
We have to make what's left last at least a month.
No, no. I want it now. Oh, please. Please, Maggie, my dear sister, please.
All right.
Please.
All right. But be careful. Don't spill any.
Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, dear sister. Oh. Oh, the sweetest sister anyone ever had. So loyal, so loving, so true.
Maggie.
Oh, I can close my eyes now. Thank you. Thank you.
Come in, Miss Terhune.
Thank you.
You know, it's a miracle how you can walk like that, being blind and all. You know, just where to turn and
well,
sit.
I remember it from last time, Mrs. Caravelle. I must come to the point. I need to buy some drugs.
Drugs?
Mrs. Caravelle, you have a tenement house in this neighborhood.
It's a respectable place.
I didn't say no. Your husband is a gambler.
Now, just a minute, Miss Terhune.
I'm not finding fault, only establishing credentials. Now, surely, with your knowledge of things, you could find someone who will sell me some drugs.
Yeah, I should have figured. With old Escalon dead. Well, I could ask a few questions, get a few answers, and maybe put you in with somebody who knows somebody.
That's all I ask.
You won't get the price or the high quality.
My sister, we can't afford to be particular.
You know, I'd rather not do a thing like this.
My sister is desperate.
I know. I hear her screaming sometimes.
You'll help me.
Yeah. If you want to call it help.
Okay, mule, we can saddle and ride.
What you got, Chubby?
I got your little old lady.
Who?
Her name is Terhune, Agnes Terhune.
How?
I told you she'd have to come up for air. How long could she stay under? She found Lester.
Lester?
Yeah, Big Lester, the neighborhood pusher. He was told to make a note of new customers, especially old ladies. He pegged her.
How does he describe her?
Thin, white hair. How many of them can there be? It's got to be yours.
I don't know. Something's missing.
What?
I don't know. Something about that old dame. I can't put my finger on it.
Well, whatever it is, you still have to finish her off.
How you doing, Julia?
All right.
How long you been on duty?
Since 12.
Boring? I'm sorry. It's not all brain work. Yeah, sometimes you gotta pull things like stakeout.
I don't mind, sir.
Anybody who looks suspicious going into the house?
No, not yet.
Trouble is, we don't know who to look for.
Sir, that truck pulling up in front of the house.
Huh? Oh, it's not. It's the electric company power truck.
Oh.
Yeah, you see? These two guys getting out, they're gonna read the meters.
How do you know, sir?
Well, they're carrying those clipboards.
I wouldn't be too sure. Who is it?
Electric company.
What do you want?
You get a short circuit reported. We gotta fix it.
I don't know, Maggie.
Well, it sounds reasonable. Let him in.
It's just something about his voice. His voice sounds familiar.
Come on, lady. We ain't got all day.
No. It's him. I recognize the voice. The killer.
She's on it. We gotta bust the door down.
What's the matter, Julia?
Isn't meter reading a one-man job, Captain?
Well, it's...
It seems to me. I've been in that house twice, and I don't think you get to the basement from the front. You have to go around to the back to get to the service entrance.
Come on. You keep behind me.
Yeah, the tall one with the dark glasses. I know her anywhere.
Don't kill me. Don't kill me.
I'm sorry, lady.
But I could never identify you. I'm blind. I'm blind.
Pay no attention. Do what you have to do.
Freeze! We're police officers.
Let it.
Drop it. Both guns. That's it. Stand still. You ladies okay?
No. Now I know it was bothering me all along. She's blind.
Are we safe? Now, officers?
Yes, ladies. You're safe now.
And so are Mule and Chappie, safe for many years at the state penitentiary, where both of them are serving long terms without parole. And so what did we give you? Life among some very ordinary people. What appeared to be a routine holdup, but you should know by now, nothing is ever routine on our show, as I shall demonstrate when I return in just a few seconds.
A Nightline, you're on the air.
About the caller who talks to
her plants?
Yes.
She should plant her garden at the library.
Uh-huh.
Learning Swahili will not help her grow an African violet.
That's good advice.
And the caller who's looking for a new job?
Oh, yeah.
She should go to the library for job information.
The library.
She should have never lost her old one.
Well, I agree.
You just don't take off work for Robert Redford's birthday.
No.
I mean, that isn't a national holiday.
You're right.
The library could have told her that.
Absolutely.
And finally, the caller who botched up his vacation?
Oh, yes.
Always plan a trip at the library first.
That was a shame.
I mean, he should have been suspicious of any travel ad that reads 8 days and only 4 nights.
Oh, you're right, yes.
You know, the library has some great new services for everyone, from general information and referral to concerts and puppet shows.
Well, thank you for calling, Nightline.
Now, I have a problem.
Oh?
You see, I'm at the library right now.
At 3 a.m.?
Well, they said it was closing time, but I started tracing my family tree, and I forgot to look at the clock.
The library. Come see what's new, besides books.
If there's a locksmith listening, I'd really appreciate it.
We'll see what we can do.
A public service message from the American Library Association.
Someone once said, everything can happen to anyone, provided he lives long enough. And so everything did happen on our story tonight. Everything. And even a happy ending. Because Maggie Terhune was turned over to the proper people who managed to cure her of her addiction. For all kinds of endings, remember we are here 7 times each week. Our cast included Patricia Elliott, Carmen Matthews, Leon Janney, Bryna Rayburn, and Earl Hammond. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
I'm not a particularly psychic person.
It is very interesting, but why don't we talk about it in the office tomorrow?
Sir, what I think you should do is call the police station in Puerto San Diego.
Where?
That's the town nearest your sister-in-law's plantation.
Oh, but that's in South America.
I know. Now, ask them to send a squad of police over to the house.
Why? Because my secretary is having a bad dream?
No, sir. Because you are frightened for the safety of your sister-in-law and your niece.
But who'd want to harm them?
Please.
But maybe 10,000 miles away.
Sir, you're William J. Big Bill Rawlinson. When you talk, people listen. Will you call the police now?
All right, I'll handle it.
You're not saying this just to quiet me.
I said I'll handle it.
Do it now. It's the only way we can save them.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
CBS 4 Seattle, this is KIXI. The weather outlook calls for increasing cloudiness with slight chance of a little rain at times tomorrow and tomorrow night. Partial clearing and chance of a few showers on Wednesday. Highs near 60, lows in the mid-40s. And currently in downtown Seattle, it's 51 degrees, 52 at the airport. The barometer is holding steady at 30.18. CBS News coming up next on KIXI.
It's the sound of bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
And the time at KIXI, now 11 p.m.
CBS News. Lebanese politicians and foreign mediators are renewing efforts to patch up the latest shattered ceasefire of the Lebanese civil war. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Interest in Beirut focuses on the arrival of Libyan Premier Abdel Salam Jalloud. Observers believe his mission is aimed at healing the current rift between the leftist Palestinian Alliance and Syria, which has been accused by the Lebanese left of blatant political and military interference in Lebanese affairs. Gunfire shook the streets of Beirut late into the night, following a day of intense artillery duels in which security sources reported 150 people dead. About 350 others were reported wounded. In the occupied West Bank of Jordan, Israeli security forces are poised to crack down on any new demonstrations. A 20-year-old Arab student was killed Monday during some Israeli gunfire while watching Israeli soldiers fight off a group of demonstrators throwing rocks at their truck. CBS News continues following this message.
If you enjoy wine with your meals, here's something you should know about wine before meals.
Before, that's the time to say I'll have a glass of Duvernay. Before a meal, by day or night, Duvernay is always right. Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Duvernay.
Most wines go with your meals, but Duvernay goes before. Think of it as an appetizer. A wine that's right for your appetite. Before lunch, before dinner at cocktail time, before whatever you've got cooking. The distinctive taste of Dubonnet before makes what comes after that much better. Dubonnet. It all started in France, of course. Product of USA, Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
International relations was topic number one at the White House Monday night as President and Mrs. Ford tendered a white tie state dinner to visiting French President and Mrs. Valérie Giscard d'Estaing. President Ford offered the first toast, expressing the hope France and the United States will remain united by common devotion to the rights of man, by a shared concern for the welfare of all peoples, and peace for all nations. Giscard, raising his wine glass, responded.
Mr. President, my sincere wish that this visit may be the occasion for the Americans to acquire a better understanding of the French people.
Giscard is on an official six-day visit to the United States. Tuesday is primary day in Michigan and Maryland, with the stakes perhaps greatest for President Ford in his home state. Most Republican leaders there expect him to defeat Ronald Reagan, but are concerned that the margin may not be large enough to blunt the surge of the former California governor, who has won five of the last six primaries. In Maryland, the big test is between Jimmy Carter and California Governor Edmund Brown, Jr. Both candidates rate that race too close to pick. More on the former Georgia governor's Monday from CBS News correspondent Ed Rabel.
Jimmy Carter concluded a day of campaigning in Maryland and Michigan in good spirits. In Maryland, Carter had received the endorsement of California State Treasurer Jesse Unruh. In Michigan, he was campaigning with the backing of Detroit Mayor Coleman Young, United Auto Workers President Leonard Woodcock, and Ford Motor Company Board Chairman Henry Ford II. Carter expects to win the Michigan primary, but nobody is certain what exactly will happen in the race with California Governor Edmund Brown, Jr. in the Maryland primary. Though polls show Carter's strength has been increasing in Maryland, Carter aides admit Brown still has a slight edge. A Carter loss in one or both primaries, it is believed, could cause uncommitted delegates to remain neutral all the way to the convention, leaving the former Georgia governor's ability to maintain his drive for a first ballot nomination open to question. Ed Rabel, CBS News, at the Detroit International Airport.
We're the fresh guys.
We're the fresh guys.
We're the fresh guys.
We're Wonder Bread.
We've got that fresh, fresh feeling that makes a bread perform. Cause we're the Wonder Fresh guys.
We're wrapped while we're still warm.
That fresh, fresh feeling really makes a sandwich score.
Cause we're the Wonder Fresh guys. Come squeeze us at your store.
Feel the freshness of Wonder Bread. Enjoy fresh-tasting Wonder English muffins, too.
Maryland, Michigan are the next stops on the campaign trail, with primary elections in both states on Tuesday.
I'm Neil Strausser, anchorman for CBS News coverage on the CBS Radio Network. And as the results and trends start taking shape, we'll keep you posted throughout the evening in special reports, hourly CBS News broadcasts, and, of course, Net Alert interrupt bulletins when the developments warrant. Follow the primaries in Maryland and Michigan Tuesday with CBS News on the CBS Radio Network.
Mary Tyler Moore and her weekly CBS comedy series walked off with five Emmys Monday night in the 28th Annual Television Academy Awards Show. ABC's two-part treatment of the Roosevelt marriage, Eleanor and Franklin, won four Emmys. ABC led the networks with 17 awards, followed by CBS with 15, NBC with 11, and the Public Broadcasting System with six. I'm Mike Stanley, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI.
I'm Ben Franklin, and once again I quote from the wisdom of Poor Richard's Almanac, on a letter. He reminds me that when I was ambassador to France, so many people offered their services to America that I had to devise a form letter of recommendation. The bearer of this letter is a person of whom I know nothing. I refer you to himself for his character, which he is certainly better acquainted with than I can possibly be. I recommend him, however, to those civilities to which every stranger, of whom one knows no harm, has a right. And now, some wisdom from a modern source.
Need insurance? See the insurance store. Insurance is our main business, not just some sideline. So with one stop, you'll find just about every kind of insurance and a choice of leading insurance companies, like Continental Insurance. For your nearest insurance store, just see an agent listed under the Continental Insurance Soldier in the Yellow Pages.
Bright and beautiful music, all day and all night. This is KIXI.